This interview is being conducted on Tuesday, September 18th, 2012, with Mr. Martin Painish at the Indian Prairie Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Painish was born on June 14th, 1926 in Chicago, Illinois. He is a retired machine repairman and learned of the Veterans History Project through his American Legion post, which is post 338 in Westmont, Illinois. Mr. Painish has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project. Here is his story. So, Marty, where were you living at the time you entered the service? What was your life like back then?
I lived on 2501 Clyburn Avenue in Chicago.
Okay.
Clyburn and Ashland area, 1943.
Were you living with your family?
Well, I was living with my folks, right.
Were you in school at the time?
I was at school at the time, and I quit. I was going to join the service.
Was this high school?
It's high school.
Okay.
And my dad said, don't go, and he says, until you have to, but I wanted to go where I wanted, you know, to be, what branch. I asked them, I haven't been out of the state of Illinois, the Racine, Wisconsin, and Whiting, Indiana. It's as far as I got to see this big country.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask them for the car for to go to Rockford or Rock Island, Illinois, just to Aaron. He says no, because of the insurance and that.
See? Okay.
So anyway, in 1943, I quit Lane Tech High School, wanted to go into the service. My father said I should stay home as long as I can and not being cowardly. But when you are called to go to do your best, always not always not only in the service, do your best not only in the service, but in life too. Being 17 years old, I thought it over a while. Not being a very religious person, I thought of the Ten Commandments. One which is, honor thy father and thy mother, for the days may be long upon the earth. I waited a little longer and saw everybody was going into the service, drafted into the service, and said, my dad, I would like to go into the branch of the service I like. In the meantime, I was thinking, I never was out of the state of Illinois, only to Racine, Wisconsin, as I said, in Whiting. I am where my uncle and aunts live. I asked my dad if I could have the car, 1932 Cadillac, to Rock Island, Rockford, and two other fellows before we in the service. We said no, no insurance and so forth, and made it a little peep, so it said no. So I got the idea, and I packed a little bag and with overalls and nice dress pants, socks. I was already militarized, and I put it in the garage next day. The next day, I took my swimming suit and towel and left my mother and left. My mother was ironing on the back porch. She seen me and thought I was going swimming. They didn't see me for 38 and a half days after that. Didn't say goodbye or anything.
So you just walked out of the house.
Just walked out of the house of my.
And how old were you?
17.
Okay.
And we started out on the streetcar to Route 66 and started hitchhiking, and we got to Starved Rock so fast, and nobody was there. The war was on, and everybody was working. I said, "Let's go to California." I had $15 in my pocket. My friends had a little money too, so we were off to California. We made good time. Just 40 miles from Rock Island, the state police stopped us. We told them we were going to be 18 next month and didn't know if we were going into the service or not. And if we did, we would not know if we'd come back or not. And we'd like to see some of this USA country. We weren't not running away from home, and our parents knew about it. This was a lie. But he said it wouldn't take long to check us out, but gave us a 40-mile ride to Rock Island.
So the police stopped you. Yeah. You convinced him that you were not running away, even though you kind of were.
Like I said, I wasn't the smartest person, but my buddy was there, and a goofy question he asked, "You want to know the truth?" to the cop. Said, that's where I had to stop him, because not a cop going to say no. And that's when I said, well, we're going to be 18 next month. We're going into service. We might go in. We don't know if I'm coming back. And our parents know about it, which they did. Anyways, he says, do me a favor. If you come to town and there's no, it's late, he says, drop in the police station. He says, it's not the best place in the world, but they'll put you up for the night. If something would happen in the town, we would be in the clear of any bad doings. I did this in Blair, Iowa, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Amarillo, Texas.
You just headed west.
I just headed west, right. And like I said, it would take a long time to explain. I had an aunt and uncle in Inglewood, California, and when I got there, they were happy to see me and so forth. And I had cousins, went in the Coast Guard and otherwise, played for Pepperdine College and so forth. And I finally, he wasn't right on the ocean, but I said, I got to see the ocean, because I didn't think I'd ever come to that. And then I thought I was going to stay there for a while, so I went to Northrop Aviation and applied for a job, which during the war they needed. So I got hired, but I quit the same day I got hired.
Why did you quit?
I decided, homesick, I reckon, or what, and I started to go, I'm going to go back. So,
now, did you leave any kind of note for your parents?
No.
So you took their car.
Right.
And picked up your buddy and...
My buddy all the way to California. Then he left. He didn't want to hike back home. He took a bus or something. No, I was on my own. So I got to Amarillo, Texas. I registered. The next day, the Texans let me sleep in the captain's chair all night. The other police gave us a bunk to sleep in. So you can see, I could say something about Amarillo. They had signs on the water fountain, no soldiers or sailors or dogs allowed, and I didn't like that. But anyways, I registered for the draft. The next day was my birthday, and I knew you had to do that to be not a draft defector. Then I got back home. And
How did you just drove back home?
No, I still hitchhiked back home, all the way back home.
Okay, now what happened with the car you took?
What?
You said you drove out hitchhiked out?
No, I hitchhiked out. Oh, my dad wouldn't give me the car. That's why I packed my bag and went west.
Okay.
And, well, then I was still debating about joining. And time went by, and that was June, July, or September. About a couple of months later, I got my greetings. And I went to the... Marines, I went to the Navy, all the branches. I didn't want to, and it was too late. Uncle Sam got me.
Now, you said you got your greetings. They were sent where?
Greetings from the President of the United States at 2501 Clyburn Avenue.
And you've gotten back home by then? How did your parents react when you came back home after this hitchhiking?
I can't remember now, but anyways, when I told her, and she said, he's going to California with a swimming suit and towel. I forgot to tell her I had the bag and clothes and everything else, you know. So I wouldn't give it up for the world, but not today. But it goes to show you, a police officer, state police, giving you 40-mile ride, and I met so many nice people that I figured 99% were good. I had some bad experience that'd take a long time to, okay, to explain it, you know, also hijacking tires, to tell me to be quiet, to give me a ride, but keep your mouth shut, you know, and so forth. So anyways, when finally I was peeved because I'm going to be in the Army. Well, what happened, 166 West Van Buren, Chicago, that morning my dad took me with the car. And they ask you, take your physical and all that, and then they ask you, what do you want, Army or Navy? I says, Navy. Army. Oh, they had the knife in me, and they're twisting it already. So I was still bad. Now that I honored my father and I listened to him, and I'm not where I wanted to go. So what happened, I took all of the examination, passed, and that. Then I went to Fort Sheridan, and they took the aptitude test, and I wanted to be, the radio test I couldn't do, that Morse code and all okay. that, but I took it, and I didn't want no, just my pay. I don't want insurance or nothing. I was so no mad. They said, no, you're going to take it, because they knew a lot of guys were discouraged, you know, from getting
who
in.
Who said you should take it?
The military.
Military, okay.
Giving you advice,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Right. So then finally, I finally woke up, if you anybody heard, the angel on my shoulder with Paul Muni. And I said, wait a minute. I says, if this keeps up, if I keep this attitude up, I'm not going to go up. I'm going to go down, you know. So I buckled down, and I took my aptitude test, and out of 250 guys, 50 of us was drafted in the United States Army Air Corps. And I after that, I said, the Lord sure moves in mysterious ways, was testing us, and seeing how much you're going to take. And when it got, I hitchhiked all around the state, and I missed Denver, Colorado, you know. And there they sent us to Buckley Field, Colorado, for my basic training.
Okay.
I got off.
How did you get there?
I got off the train. We okay. go on a train. And I get at the railroad station. There's it's all set up, tablecloth. And they come in and ask, oh, you want your eggs? I looked up. I thought I was in heaven. I said, well, this ain't Army. And then from that, I said, that should be a separate outfit. And after I got out in 47, they made it a United States Air Force.
Right.
And that's, well, then I got there. I took my training there.
So tell me about your training. Tell me about what was life like when you were in.
Your left flank, your right flank, they teach you to march and
what were your living quarters like?
Beautiful, beautiful. The barracks were good. You kept military style with foot locker and so forth.
Was it a one story or two story?
When I first got in, you saw it was two story in Fort Sheridan.
Okay.
But then when I got to Colorado, it was a single barracks.
How many men were in the barracks?
I don't remember, but there's quite a few. Yeah, old pot belly stoves there, you know.
To keep warm?
Keep warm, yeah. So I wanted to be radio mechanic, but they made me an airplane engine mechanic. So,
okay.
And that. So, and then they had the gunner. Now, in fact, I wanted to be the gunner on the 29, the tail gunner.
Okay.
Yeah, but the government had different ideas.
So you were in Fort Sheridan for how long?
Well, that not too long.
Just a couple days?
A couple days. I got my first, I don't want to mention the chewing out, you know, and because anywhere you went, you're supposed to sign, because you could be bingled, they call it at that time, that's shipped out. And my mother and dad came to Fort Sheridan to visit me. I went to the service club, and they were looking for me, and I didn't sign out. So I got my chewing out.
So you were in Fort Sheridan, and then you went by train To
Denver, Colorado.
Denver, Colorado.
Right. And I took my basic there.
And how long was your basic training in Denver?
Oh, that's, I forget off the time now. But quite a couple of months anyways, yeah.
Okay, and they taught you the basics of
marching
and all that?
Yeah, right.
You did calisthenics?
Yeah, that's it.
Exercise programs?
Right.
And what sort of classroom classes did you have?
Well, then, no, I.
Did you have any or was?
Well, didn't have enough classes of basic training, well, first aid and all that. But then, after that, we went to Texas then.
So you were a couple of months in Denver.
Right.
And they told you were going to be the engine mechanic.
Airplane engine mechanic.
Did you get any of that training there?
No, not there, at Amarillo, Texas.
That was in Texas, okay. So you had a couple months of basically learning the Army Air Corps way of doing this.
Right.
Okay.
Now, but that's when they, and I, as I said earlier, I registered in Amarillo, and I didn't know, when I came in the back door with the train, 6 months later, I just visited that place in the service club, and I said, this is familiar. I said, there, I was here just 6 months ago as a civilian, and now they came back. And so I was there, and we took I went to night school on for B-17s, but all of a sudden, as we're going to school, they get new regulations,
uh-huh.
And they figure it's coming close to the end of the war, you know, with it there, and 17 was becoming an obsolete.
Okay.
So they took us and changed it, and they sent us starting us to learn the B-29.
Okay, so this was in Amarillo.
Amarillo.
So how long were you in Amarillo?
There is not. 45, well, a couple months again.
So this was really getting into your specialty then.
Right.
Okay.
They stopped the training of the 17 and went into the. Sent us to Seattle, Washington, the Boeing plant.
Okay.
In Seattle, Washington, so we went to school there.
So you went by train up to.
Seattle. Right.
Okay.
And then we went there, like you say, a couple more months or whatever it is. And it was in May of 45. And finally, at the end of the classes, we were waiting in our regular dress uniform to a new base. And we're waiting for the payroll. And a duty sergeant comes in, wants two volunteers to pick up the payroll in downtown Seattle, Washington. And I knew the duty sergeant, and they said don't volunteer, but I said, hey, we're waiting for the dough anyways, you know. So I got a buddy of mine, and we volunteered. He said, well, go to the weapons place and barracks and check out a weapon. They gave us a Thompson submachine gun, which I never seen it fired in my life. I had the carbine and a pistol for that, and he said, that don't mean nothing. We went downtown Seattle with two staff cars and submachine gun in the back of an alley with a big steel door goes up, and we're waiting for the payroll. And
you were 19 at this time? About 19?
No, 18.
18, okay.
And I says, oh my God, here's me with Thompson Sub from Chicago on the end of the alley. And they made a big deal out of it. I don't know why. It just shows that. And what happened, one of the staff cars got a flat tire. So we had to go into one staff car, and I had $100,000 at my feet. And I only got $100 out of it, my base pay or something like that. So then I went to, I took train all the way across the northern route of the states, down through Minnesota, back home. I had a delay en route to your destination, and You learn a lot as you go along.
So it sounds like you've been in training for maybe a year at this point, 6 months?
Yeah, well, right. And then we're going now on the line training. Now we're going on the base training, see.
Okay.
But we, before that, you learn a lot of tricks, you know, so.
So you were from Seattle, you finished your training there.
Yeah.
And you were 18 or 19 at the time?
18, yeah.
18 yet?
Yeah.
And you were, your next stop, where were you sent to next?
That was, went home on a delay en route, that's all.
Okay.
Then I went to Savannah, Georgia, Chatham Field.
So from Chicago, you went down to Savannah?
Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Chatham Field.
Chatham Field. And what was the purpose?
On the line training.
Okay, meaning what?
Meaning we worked on the planes, or went to like school and not working on the planes and that field. But as we went out on the ramp and we had the classes, the instructor was giving us classes.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden we're sounding off with all the answers. And he said, "Hey, what is this? I'm supposed to be teaching you and you knew all this." And he said, "We ought to know. We just come from school from Seattle." Oh, my God. So we had a couple of months. We come there, report to the teacher, and you're on your own. The government again. Anyways, we went to the PX and listen to music and have chocolate malts and then go back. Next day, go to school, go back again. So, because we already had the training, and just wasting the time. See?
So they sent you for the same training you'd already had.
Yeah.
Just in a different
That's
place.
Government job. So, anyways.
So
then,
how long were you in Georgia then?
Oh, that was good. I was down at Savannah Beach going swimming. Then I went to Jacksonville, Florida, because I took advantage of the government's expense giving me this vacation. I hitchhiked down there, and I wanted to go down to the Keys, but I didn't make it. And the war was coming close to the end, so I figured I'd get off the base. Anytime you're on the base and something that they close it up, you can't. So I got off. And I was in the middle of Ocala, Florida when the war ended. And
okay.
Ocala. And they swarmed Jacksonville and that, climbing traffic light wires and all that. And when I remember one guy was complaining, he told a cop, "Stop, stop," you know. He just was watching by the windows, you know. He says, "Listen, you only have a war at the end, 20 years, you know. The fire trucks were just like ants, they were all over." So, and anyways, I read in the paper, all government employees 2 days off. I says, "I'm a government employee. I stayed away 2 days and never was marked AWOL." Never was. I finally got back to my base. They didn't get me for AWOL. I said, "I'll be darned." So then, okay, then it slowed down. You know, war
right.
is over.
You were thinking this army life wasn't too bad.
Well, it was God's will. You know, okay, sera, sera. So anyways, I get back to Chatham Field. We're gonna go to Stuttgart, Arkansas. For what? I don't know. We went there.
By train again?
No. I don't know for what. Just we were there for a while. Then it changed again. Because after the war, everything is getting like a turmoil. So I found out that I didn't have enough points. They go out on the points then.
Okay.
They were discharging.
And
so,
do you remember what the points were? Was it so many days in or service? Or?
No, I didn't have that many points because
okay.
I was a rookie. So anyways, I was supposed to go to ORD, overseas.
Okay.
Kearney, Nebraska. But we figured time to get there. I said, "I got time to go back home. You know,
okay.
a little while, you know." So I hitchhiked back to Chicago. And
from Nebraska?
From Arkansas.
Oh, from Arkansas, okay.
Yeah. So I got back home. I'm walking down Cliburn Avenue. And I see my dad, old 32 Cadillac, I turned into a window or off, you know, and I heard this later. And then my mother says, that's Marty. Dad says, nah, he's in Nebraska or Arkansas, somewhere. No. So I let him get home first. Then I got home and I knocked on the door. And they were, my mother said, I told you, she can tell me her son from the back, as everywhere. So then I stayed home a while. I wanted to hitchhike back. They said, no, I got a train back to Nebraska. So right then and there, we had to make a decision to get out or re-up. And
how long had you been in at this point?
Well, no, I can remember. No, it's a couple, not even a year, probably better.
Okay.
A little better, because they gave you a choice: 30-day furlough, a stripe promotion,
right.
And because they needed occupation troops. You know,
uh-huh.
And there again comes honor thy father and thy mother and my 10 commandments that I believe in, and Sergeant York. There's a lot of guys did more than I did,
uh-huh.
And I says, why go out on point and maybe call you back? I said, another year isn't not gonna 18 yet, you know.
Right.
I said, another year isn't gonna hurt me, and there's a lot that did more than I did, so I re-upped.
For a year,
and they gave me I become corporal, and a 30-day furlough, and then I got home again for 30 days, and all of a sudden we learned, like, this is where it comes in now. We learned I wired to you know where you're going, you know.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember all this. It's a long time ago. I says, I would like 2 weeks extension due to family difficulties. See? Try it. I heard about it. You try it.
Okay.
You like it. You don't harm it. You like it. You know, try it. I got it wired back 2 weeks granted. Hey! I said, maybe I keep this up for a whole year. So I, after the 2 weeks, I wired again. I said, maybe the government can go up, you know. So anyways, I wired again. Would like 2 more weeks instead. No, then report is ordered, you know. So that what happened, the government did goof up. And 2/3 of the population is in the east from Mississippi.
Right.
On. And the other third is a big country, but not...
Right.
Well, populate. They swarmed the east with reenlistments.
Uh-huh.
They were putting them in motels and hotels. They had to open up another base. They closed down in Goldsboro, North Carolina. They opened a base there to accommodate the ones that we came in. So anyways, it took it took 8 hours from Goldsboro to Greensboro, 100 miles. And I got pictures of that too over there. But then went from Goldsboro, we were bunked, you know, took care of, housed. And then we went back for orders and other details in Greensboro. After that, I got pictures, or you saw it, mm-hmm. I think. And then back to Goldsboro again. And I wanted to go, waiting for order, I wanted to go to Germany. I had relatives in Germany, and I thought I could get there. I was,
uh-huh.
you know. So I missed it by one shipment to Munich, Germany, because of my relatives over there, uncles and that. And then they sent me all the way across the states again to Camp Stoneman, California, and waiting for a ship, and I with winter clothing, overcoat. Then I, oh no, Alaska, and no, they sent me to Guam. That all that clothing. Well, I don't know, I saved a few of the clothing. I said, I had to carry this over here. And then they burned it, burned all this over on Guam.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man. Even blankets and this and that when I was there. And one of the officers says, hey, not to tell him that he said it, but if you can, you know, if you want to take some of it, more or less. And I, what,
so basically, they didn't want to have to ship it
right,
back.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, with planes, too. They used they used our planes for fill.
Yeah.
With all our B-20, fill them up, all that. So anyways, I worked on the 29s on Guam until we had TDY, temporary duty, shipping them back to the States in Hawaii. I went there, and then one of our officers got caught selling Army radio equipment.
Okay, so they were burning all this stuff that they weren't going to need, so they wouldn't have to ship it back.
Right, right.
And how long were you on in Hawaii? Was this in Guam?
On Guam, yeah. Well, I was on the 315th bomb squadron, and maintaining the planes, like I said, before we send them back to.
Okay.
When then we were in Hawaii, and then I told you he got caught selling Army rail.
Right.
And he sent me back. When I got there, my bomb group broke up.
And he sent you back where?
To Guam.
Back to Guam.
Remember,
okay,
I went Kwajalein, Johnson, Kwajalein. And they had the testing ships there for the atomic bomb too. They dropped.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that. Then when I got to Guam, I had no bomb, no group. They lost my records, so sergeant said, "Yeah, you can have a bunk here if you want." I could have been there today. I said, "I wish I would have collected for my back pay." And
so how did that get straightened out?
Well, you got air inspectors and you got inspecting generals in the regular army, air inspector in the air corps. So I went to the to get checked up. I said, here, I'm supposed to be discharged in a couple of days already. My year is up. And here I'm a man without a base, you know. So finally they got an air sea rescue plane, it's a B-17 with a lifeboat underneath.
Okay.
And they flew us to Saipan.
Okay.
And we went there and for processing to wait for the ship, you know.
Uh-huh.
That. So, well, just like I said, I was early. 8 hours waiting for the ship to come in, eating sardines and crackers. And then finally the ship come in and played California, Here I Come. And then they as we passed a certain place, you heard of it, where the Japs told their people that we are sadists and we raped the people and all that. We're jumping off the suicide cliff with the babies and all that. And we passed that on there and that. So then there was, I volunteered on the ship because I'm a Chahoun. And I had a buddy from Peoria, Illinois, sergeant, and we volunteered at my chow and say, okay, the rest of you can go. And I had my initials, MP, Marty Phoenix. And that's where I told you that prostitute was on and the guy that was a high flyer.
And what ship was this, by the way?
Cape, this was a Marine Serpent.
Okay.
A Marine Serpent. And we had certain certain guys as guard, like guarding them. And avoid other soldiers or that to stay off the bow, you know, or the, what do you call. So then we walked around and made sure they were all posted and watching the Red Cross lady, but didn't do too good a job. Anyways, then 2 days out of Frisco, well, we the orders for all the ones in the gun turrets, the guns were gone. But they had the turrets yet.
Okay.
And he said, any object in the water, you report to the bridge.
Okay. You,
whether it's a box or this, because there's mines yet.
Right.
So we're walking arm in arm, my buddy, and then all of a sudden the guy said, where do you report, you know, object? No, I said, we saw you right to the bridge. We went and got to the bridge, got out the binoculars, and it was a loose mine. And it was 12 o'clock. I had all this in my book, and I lost, you know, I took a diary of it. And it was a hard right and then a hard left, and the mine just passed the ship. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't be here today. Now, that's what I keep telling a lot of younger. If they tell you to do something, the Army or service got a reason for everything. Now, I wish I could have get that man's name today, because he saved a lot of lives. Mm-hmm. He was good. If it was a guy, most of them, I could tell you stories that later yeah. on. If he would have slumped down in that turret, other words, you know, to right. hell with it, you know. There we are. But there was a man that did his job by order.
Right.
And that's, I can never forget that. So
this trip, you went from Guam to Hawaii, and from Hawaii back to San Francisco.
No, Hawaii back to Guam.
Hawaii back to Guam.
Yeah.
And then from Guam.
That's where I was then to Saipan.
To Saipan.
Saipan, yeah.
And then from Saipan?
On the ship.
On the ship back to California.
California, right.
Okay. And that was the Marine Serpent was the ship.
Yeah, right.
Okay. How long was that trip from Saipan to San Francisco? Do you remember?
About a couple of days, I think. I don't know. That was 6,000 miles.
Couple days, couple weeks?
Not on a ship, no.
Okay.
I can't remember how long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you, and you said you volunteered. You were an MP on the ship?
Yeah, I volunteered there because I had so many people posted for guard duty. Yeah.
How many men were on the ship? About how many men?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
A couple hundred, a couple thousand? A couple hundred
anyways, a thousand maybe.
Okay. Yeah. And what did you do on your free time? What did you do in your spare time?
That's what I said. I would be good in the Navy. It didn't bother me. I'm going to get sick and all that. Heck, I took one of the canvas sacks, you know, from downstairs. I went under the gun turret and I hooked it up. It made me a hammock out there. And, you know, it's mind over matter, you know.
Okay.
You sit there and drool, you know. So all I do, what do you got to eat?
What were your living quarters like on that ship?
Good, very good.
Do you have the hammocks? Left?
Yeah, hammocks, chairs up there. And
how many men in a space?
Yeah, I remember all that.
Okay.
That was too. I was too interested in that. Just where's the mess hall?
And what was it? What was a typical meal like?
Oh, good. We in the Air Corps, we traveled all the time, Pullman and dining.
Okay.
Until after the war, like I told you, 8 hours from Goldsboro to Greensboro, and then box lunch, you know. Well, the war is over now, you know. They didn't do, but I had good service, good food. In fact, a lot of them today I talk, the best, they call it, I got to watch my Army slang, chip beef on toast.
Yes, yes.
I think you
S-O-S.
Heard the other expression.
Yeah. S-O-S, yeah.
Yeah. So and that was I a lot of them didn't like breakfast. I got up, I had breakfast, and I even love on Guam. I like KP, all the good fruit, the cocktails, the juice, and that. I just wonderful. Like we had Japs guarding the our in the mess hall, you know,
uh-huh.
gluing this and cleaning our grease bed, and we asked him, you know, we had a translation book. Where you're from, you know, one was from Tokyo and one was from, a small island. And they asked where I'm from, see. And I said, Chicago. Oh, man, they knew she was G-Man. They were scared of me. And here I was, not no Al Capone guy. But you just mentioned Chicago.
And that was the image they had.
Whether they're English or not, they knew Chicago, what it was, yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I'm doing this for future.
Yeah.
And I would suggest I have other ideas with education. No kid should quit school. And if they did, 1 year military service. That's what I want to say. You know, you learn discipline, respect, you know, and honor and so forth.
Now, you quit school, you were in your senior year when you
third
quit
year.
School? Your third year.
Yeah.
So you didn't finish your third year of school.
Well, on Guam, I heard about this, where you can finish school, I forget.
Okay.
And I finished high school through the service.
Okay.
So I got my high school diploma in 47, I think, from Lane Tech. I got all, there was a lot of others with it.
You know,
we took that test. So
okay. So we were talking about sailing from Saipan to California.
Yeah.
You got to California. Where did you land in California?
In Oakland base, the regular docks they got over there, yeah.
Okay.
And then that part, I forget now, maybe was the excitement being home. I know we had to get back to Fort Sheridan.
Right.
And that's by railroad, it got to be, you know.
Right.
And then that's when we got our orders and we're back
so you
to Fort Sheridan.
19 or 20 about this time?
No, let's see. This is a 40.
This was your
47.
Second. Okay.
Yeah, 40, 47.
So you were 20.
The whole time 20. I was 2.5 years and okay. one and 2 days. And when he got to Fort Sheridan, you still time coming, you and
right.
that, and I was still out until I got March. I didn't bring my discharge paper. March 17th or something that I was officially discharged. Yeah.
You were officially discharged at Fort Sheridan.
Yeah, right.
So that's where you were inducted and that's where you were discharged.
But I got it was discharged from Fort Sheridan, but I wasn't in there. I was waiting for it to be discharged, but in civilian clothes. Yeah, you know, understand?
Okay.
Like a furlough.
Okay.
And when it came to the end, that was it, yeah.
Okay, so how long were you in that state between formal discharge, when you were really out, and when you were still waiting to be discharged?
30 days, something like
okay,
that.
Okay, about a month.
About a month.
But you were in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, I was
and
in
you,
Chicago.
And where were you? You were acting as a civilian, even though you still had a month to go.
Right, right.
So were you living back at home with your parents?
You see, at that time, in fact, when I was in Hawaii, they brought the flag back from Washington that flew at Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
I got pictures, and I was in civilian clothes. I went up to the general, but if it was in service, I'd have to respect them. But see, there was a law. You could wear civilian clothes then.
Okay.
After that, but you're still wearing the service then.
So what did you do for those 30 days that you were still technically in the service?
Well, thinking about work. Then they come out with this 5220. You ever heard that?
Tell us.
That was the government gave you $20 a week for 52 weeks.
Okay.
That give you a chance to. It don't last that long. So then finally I ended up with International Harvester.
Okay.
As a diesel and gasoline engine mechanic in Melrose Park.
Okay.
And it was nice. I liked it, but I didn't every year with the union strike, you know, and I don't like that. I wanted a steadiness, you know.
Uh-huh.
So finally, I got out of there, but there were stories about the harvester. They paid cash on a Friday, And that was one of the big airplane engine plants way back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big plant. Well, I don't, and the companies or any of them always have rules and regulations, no gambling. Just, and here they were gambling downstairs, you know, and so forth. And I happened to go down there for the right purpose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I come out of boot, stall, and I went back. I thought somebody fainted, got hurt. And I look over there and all of a sudden, let's go. And it was like a swarm of cattle. They almost pushed me over, run for the stall, and there's only one exit.
Yeah.
No, I went, I was the first one out. I went, what did I do? Do nothing.
Yeah.
I just got, my foreman was there, and he says, I said, what are you going to do? He wasn't important. He said, just go up there, and told me to turn in all my tools and that, and go, you know, you fire you, you know, for gambling, you know. So I says, I wasn't doing
yeah.
it. So that's one thing I liked about this union time is we had a hearing, mm-hmm. just like in here, and all of the different kind of lines, 34 line, this line, that, and they question you. Were you down there? I said, yes, sir. Were you down there in the right purpose? Yes, sir. And then my foreman spoke up. He's a good worker. Another person spoke up. Attendance was good, and that. And he says, "Okay." He said, "You're supposed to work." It was on a Friday. You gotta make hay while it's sunshine. You work when they ask you, not when you want. You know, but some people don't think that way. So I said, "Yes." As far as I know, now Monday morning, went there, give me my blocker back, this and that. But the rest didn't. I said, that is good. You mm-hmm. sip the good from the bad, not throw everybody yeah. into one thing. So that I kind of agreed, but that didn't stay that long. Then I worked for Marshall Steel over here at Countryside and Lawndale in 66. And my dad worked at American Forge for 26 and a half years. And then he says, get me in there as machine repair. And that was in 1950. And after I got started there, then he said, you got a lifetime job, which almost did until they closed, had a 100-year contract, I think. Mm-hmm. And anyways, I stayed there 38 and a half years. In the meantime, worked part-time 16 and a half years for Illinois Bell Telephone Company. That's the one where mm-hmm. they... So I put in a little time yeah. working in that.
Now while you were doing, you were a civilian, but you still had, did you join any organizations, any veterans organizations?
In 1955, right, I joined the VFW.
Okay.
And I stayed there for a long time until we moved, my folks had a shell built and we did all the inside ourselves. Even digging the well and dynamiting and everything. And
you built a home out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tri-State Villas. They had four units. And then finally I joined the VFW, and then when I come out here I got occupied and I didn't keep my door. I would have over 50 years or better mm-hmm. with the VFW, and it was canceled. But then I came back out here. I got married.
Uh-huh.
I got married. I moved into the city for a little while, and then I moved closer to my factory to save up a buck. And then finally, the city changed with certain clientele too. I said, "Get me the first shack out of here," and I come back out here, and that was it. So
you've been living out here
since 57, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you joined the American Legion out here?
Then when my plant closed, shut it. So I stayed till the last thing minute, and then I want to come out here in April or something, and that was May was Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw my buddies selling poppies, and they, you know, we talked, and I said, well, now I'm retired, forced retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll get, right away I joined the VFW. And then two or three years later, I joined the American Legion. So I was occupied pretty well with the two.
Okay.
Up until now, I just retired 21 years with the American Legion as Sergeant of Arms, and I'm a lifetime member with the VFW. And they gave me life membership with the American Legion for my time. Yeah, nice plaque, yeah.
And you also just came back from an honor flight recently.
Yeah, on July the 11th, I went on my honor flight, right. And that was the greatest experience I had in my, being my first commercial airline ride. I was flying 29, 17s, like I told you, but I never was on a commercial airline. I got the pictures of my captain that flew the plane, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So you flew to Washington, D.C., and you saw the World War II Memorial.
Right. Very good. Right. Everything, yeah. That was most perfect setup that they have. Like I said, I'll tell the government, if they want to know how to run a perfect scheme, see the honor flight people. I says say 700 volunteers, no pay, and doing such a good job where we got certain people getting high pay and not doing the same work. So they kind of wake you up in Washington somewhere. Yeah. Okay, there
was. And you were also known as the flag man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been flag man since I said my. That in 1934, I was even at the World's Fair.
And that's because?
My birthday flag. And I retire all soil and worn flags by burning. And I also acquire the United States mailbox, red, white, and blue. It's in front of my house to deposit old and worn flags. And I got somebody that told me they got two more, and I might see how they are and pick them up, and I'm going to put them at our post or in a community where they can put. I was thinking of barrels, you know,
right?
Because they're volume, and I get a lot of big flags, you know.
So you're the flag man because you were born on Flag Day,
right?
And this has been an interest all your life,
right? And I not only retire the flags just like that, I cut off all the grommets.
Okay.
It's all brass. And if I did all this time, how many hundreds or whatever, that would all the brass would be in the ground.
Right.
But I put them on a wire on there. And when it's after the flags are all burnt, retired by burning, I put them in the hot ashes and burn all the excess cloth from the grommets. And I got all the brass.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take and put them in a coffee can. I got cans full of them.
Okay.
And which it don't deteriorate.
See? Right.
No, I can save the brass. Can you imagine that over the whole nation if you did that? How much brass you would have?
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, that's where Americans easy come. Like computers now and all that. Throw it out. They don't know how to recycle and use. What way before the World War II, Japanese was buying all our scrap.
Mm-hmm.
You see how they threw it back as a true munitions and that. So we should be more economized and use stuff that we can make good out of, you know.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, how did your experience in the military affect the way you think about war or about the world in general right now?
Well, lately, I got a different attitude now. I'm getting more into religion. I don't go to church on time. Don't be the hypocrite. Go there and then confess, and then 2 minutes later go do it over again. When you're supposed to say you did wrong, you're not supposed to do it again. And I was baptized Catholic, but never brought up Catholic. I changed in the service too, I didn't say that. I didn't know what Catholic, so I went, became Protestant.
Okay.
I want to play safe. And it was good. And but I find, I've heard about this program from the Philadelphia Church of Christ, Philadelphia, was his name. He had a big feud with the government, and they won. Mm-hmm. Government lost, and that's the it's like the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.
Okay.
They break down, you know, a common ordinary person reads it and ain't getting it, but he breaks down what he was saying, and they do a good job on this, and mm-hmm. I'm finding it out more every day. He can tell you just now in the Bible from the beginning to the end, mm-hmm. and what period of time we are in now, mm-hmm. about all this weather and this and that. That's not an accident. That's the work of God. He's trying to wake up America and the people. There is somebody more powerful than government and politicians. And they're not doing it, like Sodom and Gomorrah. They even predict America is going to lose at one time or another. Mm-hmm. I cut this article out. Because we fill the stadiums with football people, basketball, big rock and roll things. How many churches are filled up? Mm-hmm. And they don't believe that there is, and the Christ is coming back. See, I don't want to get into the religion, but the Ten Commandments, I wish I would have got from Alabama. I would have mm-hmm. put on my front lawn right now. And can you imagine if every one of us would live up to one of the commandments? Not a one of them that the people that believe mm-hmm. in that. But he's going to come back, but you know, it takes some people, just like the doubting time and Thomas, he believed until he feel the nails in his head or the spear in his side, and then he believed. And what did Christ say? He said, bless those that haven't seen, and you know, that mm-hmm. haven't believed but haven't seen. So I said, I don't want to get into but there's one God. Even with this big turmoil now, they talk about the Quran and that movie now. One person can up just because of one person, but them people shouldn't act like animals. You know, if there was wrong, get the one that wrong and talk. But kill four of our people, you know, the situation. And but. The German saying, if you get too soon old and too late smart, mm-hmm. you know.
I've heard that.
And some of them, dumm geboren and nix gelernt. They're dumb born and they never learn.
So when you went in the military, what sort of effect did it have on your life? Do you see it as having had a positive effect on your life?
I wish it was compulsory military training, at least.
Okay.
Men and women.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're out of work going there, but get in there and they took the ROTC out of school. Mm-hmm. Like, why? That was good. You could make an officer. And not only that, what was the other thing? National Guard.
Okay.
All right. Air National Guard, neighbor, whatever. But they should come back with the CCC, mm-hmm. like during Roosevelt, Forest Preserve,
right.
Now with the fires and all that. Get them. There's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the government, spending it foolishly. An Allen wrench for $1,000. Huh? You know, you heard of. I'm just maybe
right.
making an example or this and that. They're not. They tell us the budget, they should get some common ordinary person in Washington, you know, show them how to budget, you know. Oh boy, I'm gonna get off my, I'll have them knocking on my doors here pretty soon.
So is there anything we haven't talked about in this interview that you'd like to add before we finish? So there's something you want to add before we finish?
About education.
Okay.
I didn't like the way, a union is all right in certain way, but that's like it's like their mouthpiece. They talk for you, you know. And in some cases, like I predicted, you know, I said they shifted the good from the bad. And others, I seen a lot. Anyways, with education, from what I heard and read, I don't know how true it is, but in Russia, you got get an aptitude test. You got intelligent people. You got down to illiterate, you would say. But don't mix them. Separate. Push the smart ones ahead, and then the next one, then the next one, and keep. And it can be taught. But like I'll give you an example. When I was in Lane Tech, geometry class come in. Teacher had a problem on the board. Goldberg raised his hand. Says that's wrong. Teacher says, well, nobody's perfect. I mean, I'm saying it, but God, she's come up and show me. Went up to the board, showed him. She says, you're right. And that's no more. We're not God.
Right.
Everybody makes mistakes. That's what I say. That's why they got erasers on pencils. So anyway, and he did that. And when she had a problem for the next day, homework, before that bell rang, he had that done already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you got a poorer class of a person, education, you know, smart, and they see that, he kind of get embarrassed. And that's why, I'm going to quit, you know.
Uh-huh.
But if you get these, hey, push. My sister got a double promotion way back when we had diphtheria and scarlet. Oh, it's a long story. And anyway, he got that. We could educate the smart ones, put them together, the next in category, in aptitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And not only the children, I say the teachers too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, when I, first day of school, high school, or my first class, we talk punctuality and that. She comes in late with her coat on and that, and starts jumping rope and all that, and then gives us the paper and said, write down the use and care of furs. And here she's opening her mail and that, and so forth. Now, what's this teaching?
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not saying everyone,
mm-hmm.
but and most of everything is money,
mm-hmm.
greed. My dad was a tool and die maker in that factory. Big dies, $10,000 die. You put it on and you cut. Yeah. If you make a mistake, it's not like in Hollywood, cut, do it over again.
Right.
It's got to be done the first time. Now, a boring mill operator going in, making curves and radiuses and that, can't even see in this hole. And $10,000, it's got to be done right the first time.
Yeah.
All right. That's where I'm saying some are overpaid and some are underpaid.
Uh-huh.
You got to give credit where credit's due. That's what you need for progress. I mean, that's my final thing. There's got to be a lot of change in educating our, like Potter Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bad boy.
Right.
It takes time, you know, to do it. But there's a will, there's a way.
Okay.
It can be done. Edgar A. Guest, but it can be done.
All right. Well, with that, we are going off record.